B-Pod Studios.
.5 Sports Hub. It is Touch and Rich in the Town Fair Tire Studio. This morning with us, we have Ted Johnson.
Yeah.
Filling in for Fred. By the way, so Ted, you went to high school in, like, not Los Angeles. What part of California?
I went to Carlsbad High School, which is, Carlsbad is just north of San Diego, about 20 miles.
So you essentially north went County. To the 90210 High School. Is that kind
sort of yeah, kind of like that?
Because my whole concept of high school in, like, Southern California during that period, because it was, like, the early 90s, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you went to the 90210
right.
High School.
True or false, you were a member of the surfing team in high school?
True. I was on the surf team, man. So I moved there. I went from Houston to Iowa City, Iowa, of all places, for literally 2 years. And then when I got to California, I was like a fish out of water.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I literally show up wearing jean jackets and, you know, and they were like, bro, that doesn't work here. And so
they lowered their shades.
I wanted to fit in and I wanted to make friends. And so the most popular kids in the school were the surfers. So I made friends with, like, two of the surfers, learned how to surf, and I was on the surf team. Sucked. I was terrible.
Awful. You made the team in Southern California.
Yeah.
I think you're downplaying that. You must have been pretty good.
I was okay. I mean, I was okay. But
was that just one of those things, just as a natural athlete, you could just pick right up? Because to me, that just seems like such a foreign concept.
It is very difficult to learn surfing and be good at it. And what happens is, what I realized was it's a very territorial sport. Like, you go out to a certain break, and if they don't know who you are, good luck trying to get a wave, honestly. And it's just one of those deals where you're like, you're the new guy. Nobody knows who you are. Dude, get away from our break kind of thing.
So you had to kind of cram the space where the waves break and they won't let you in?
Yeah, and if you're trying to learn, it's very difficult because trying to position yourself on the wave and you see it coming and you're trying to get in the perfect spot and you're still trying to learn, am I regular footed? Am I goofy footed? Do I like, you know, going to the right, to the left?
Do
I like
what does that mean, goofy footed?
Left foot forward, right? Is that
left
goofy
foot? Forward
foot?
Is
right foot forward is
right
goofy foot.
Right foot forward is goofy. Okay. Left foot forward is regular footed.
Okay. So, how do you know that?
You don't think I wrote some sweet waves in my
growing
life?
Up in a landlocked area of Georgia? Sure, of course you nailed it.
I've surfed. I've taken like three surf lessons.
Okay.
I sucked. I think I rode a wave for maybe 10 seconds.
Okay.
But it was like one of those where it's like a small one, and I was able to ride it into the shore.
I'm telling you, the first time I really caught a wave, though, and rode it for, you know, all the way was one of the best. Surfing, there's two soul sports. I think are soul sports.
Ooh, now we're talking soul sports.
Yeah, soul sports, man. Soul sports where you just see boaty. You're in tune with the environment, man. I was like, I'm just out there in tune with the waves and the sun and the fish underneath me. So, you know, it's a soul sport. And, like, I love golf. I'm a huge golfer. I love to play. Soul sport. So you're out there, man, and you're in the nature, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm, and I got schools of dolphins swimming under me. It just doesn't get any better than that. You're out there just sitting on that board, and you can just hours would go by. Hours would go. Yeah, bro. It was just a good. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed my time as a surfer. I almost killed myself surfing, literally, because I just didn't know what I was doing. And so I went to start playing football after. I realized I didn't have a future in surfing, but
there was a huge future in commercial surfing.
But we put out the Carlsbad High School. We win state championships almost every year. We put out Taylor Knox, he was one of the best surfers, of 10, 15 years ago. So,
Real quick, let's go to Evan. Evan, you are this one right here. Evan, what's up, man? You're on Toucher and Rich.
Yeah, it's Rich. You know, Beverly Hills is nowhere close to Carlsbad. And I'm sorry, Ted, I'm a fan, but you know better calling Carlsbad anything close. I graduated from Beverly.
Yeah.
I grew up in La Jolla. I know better than that when you're talking about Carlsbad, man.
Take that.
So you're saying he's a 90210 poser? Is that what he's saying?
If he's even pretending to be that, yes, he's a hoser.
I love you, man.
No, I'm not claiming. I didn't claim I was same as Beverly Hills 102. 90210.
I agree. It wasn't you. Rich made the comparison to Beverly Hills. But
Listen, I'm very aware of California geography.
Yeah, the the culture there, though, is so distinct, and it's either you're in it or you're not. Like, yeah. It's a very Southern California, I think it's very cliquey. Like, the jocks don't hang out with the surfers.
Okay.
The surfers don't hang out with
the
jocks.
So the surfers were cooler than the jocks in that part of the country?
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
Okay, so everyone wanted to hang out with the surfers. They were the coolest guys in school.
Oh, all the hot chicks were dating the surfers.
They were dating the surfers.
Oh, no question.
Okay.
No question.
Now, so why the transition from, like, because it was in high school when you decided you wanted to be all in on football, right?
Yeah,
because you were kind of dabbling in everything.
Right. No, it became. I just wanted to do what everybody. I thought everybody did there was surf.
Yeah,
and the two thoughts in my head when I moved there was, I got to surf or I got to smoke pot. I just thought everybody smoked pot.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I'm like, well, I don't smoke pot, so I'll
was
just...
that everywhere? And because my school it was more drinking. Like it was less pot smoking.
It was definitely more drinking than it was pot smoking for sure. But I just wanted to fit in, so I started surfing. That's what I did. But my disposition and who I am as a person, I'm wired for football.
Sure.
Right? And I was an aggressive surfer.
How does one be an aggressive surfer?
Well, I would take waves I had no business taking. I was in a heat one time where I got second place just because I got out past the shore break. It was so big. It's like a walled. It was like one of those waves that was real heavy, you know, and you duck dive and you're under water. Like, it takes you 10 seconds and you come up, and then here comes another wave, and you got. So it was very difficult to get out past the shore break.
Yeah.
And then once you got out there, the waves were almost unrideable because they'd all barrel over at the same time. There was no face to ride, right? So I was like, screw it. I'm going to go out there. Everybody was riding short, like the whitewash. Mm-hmm. So their scores were based on them riding whitewash.
And you said, look at me.
I'm going out, man.
I'm TNC Surf Designs. Check me out, baby.
Right? So it took me literally, there's like 15 minutes in a heat.
Sure.
And it took me literally 12 minutes to get out past the tour break. So I get out there and I'm like, you know, there's the warning for the 2 minute, the horn sounds, and it's like 2 minutes. Here comes this huge set. The first wave comes, and I'm like, get to the very top, and I'm like, I pull out. No, I don't like it. I didn't feel good. The second one, I drop down on it, fall off the board, hit the bottom. It waved. I felt like it was 30 seconds underneath water, just getting churn. I come up. Everyone on the beach giving me a standing ovation.
Just for trying.
I got second place in that heat, and then that was the end of my surfing.
I always see those guys so close together when they're waiting for a wave.
Yeah.
How do they not jack each other up? Like, how
pull
do they
each other's
not,
leash.
Yeah, and, how do they not get surfboards to the skull? Because you just see everyone at the same time go up in the same wave, and they might be 5 feet apart from each other. At any moment, you just slip, and that board is like basically a bullet, and it can go straight into somebody's ankles or head. Did you ever, like... see any of that happen? Because
I've seen guys snake each other, like where you take the wave when it's you have the right to the wave, the guy snakes you, and I've seen fights out there, big time fights.
Okay, here's
in the water.
So I need my surf to English dictionary, man. I'm picking up maybe half of what you're saying.
So
I'm just happy I'm kind lingo, of follow. Yeah, I'm happy.
All right, the most important question. So you said pot smoking was pretty big in your high school, right? Did you get high the first time you smoked? Because I'm having a hard time.
Rich needs help. He needs help.
I'm having a hard time.
I forgot
man.
About that.
Yeah, ever since it was legalized, I was like, all right, well, now that it's legal, I'm going to go. Because I don't want to say I was a nerd, but I was always like terrified I was going to lose my job. Yeah. Like, always. Like, even like in like high school and in college, like I was in a band. I had to buy like gear. I had to bring my wife on a date. Like, I was afraid I was going to lose my job.
Have you tried edibles, Ted?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Now, explain that to him because he's really struggling with it.
No. He doesn't have to explain it to me. I know you eat the edibles and you're supposed to get high. However, I went out to one of the dispensaries, the legal ones, the one out in Leicester or whatever it is. And I went out there and I got like a bunch of, I got like a vape pen and an eighth of an ounce. Huh. And they were out of the oil. So I have to vape the dry weed itself, which I heard isn't a great thing. And that didn't work for me, but I could say user error. Maybe that was my problem. Yeah. But I also bought a big-ass bag of gummies. And so I started small, like they say you do. And the first night, I didn't do anything. I think I had, like, 4, like, milligrams of THC or whatever. And, like, finally, the next night, I got so pissed I wasn't getting high. I think I took, like, 25 or 30, like, milligrams, which I should have been blasted out of my mind.
And you weren't.
And nothing
happened. Interesting. Not a big fan of the edibles. Not a big fan at all.
Oh, nobody is.
So you never tried the... some people swear by them. Oh, so it's everything's so different. So how it hits them and affects them.
So did you get high like right away the first time you ever tried it?
I did.
Okay, you see,
I did, bro.
There's people. Some people are saying that there's some people who are built with a thing where it takes several times to try it before you can actually get high.
Yep.
Where were you when you first got high?
Like Lake Tahoe, bro. I was with my cousin Chris, Lake Tahoe, 4th of July. I was a sophomore in high school. I'll never forget it. It was the greatest trip ever, man.
All right, so what was the situation, man? Was it a bong? Was it or just a straight up joint? And what were you doing? Oh, and what do you remember about that night?
I just remember I was with my cousin who was about 3 years older than me. So whenever you're hanging out with guys and you're a sophomore in high school and you're hanging out with guys that are like two or three, I felt really cool.
The way.
I was soaking all of this in. I was like, wait, what is this grass? And it was a joint, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And we're literally very just what you would think. We're up in these mountains. We're at the Lake Tahoe in this beautiful cabin, and it's 4th of July, and it's like Bob Marley's playing, and we're smoking. And it was the first time I had done anything wrong. Like, I felt like I was such a Boy Scout.
Sure.
And
sure.
My cousin is being cool to me with his boys on 4th of July. Because I got it, you know, and I'm smoking the show, and I'm like, this is pretty good.
It was pretty good.
This is pretty good.
Yeah, the fireworks are going off, and you're tasting the colors.
Oh, the fireworks were fantastic. So, yeah, that was my first time. I'll never forget the first time I smoked pot.
All right. Well, I will Lake never Tahoe. Forget the first time I did it and nothing happened. Sooner or later, I'm going to do it again.
You'll find an oil or different ways to consume it.
That's the thing. That's
when do you
thing.
Go back at it? I mean, you've taken a step back from this. When are you going
to
try
it
again?
Dude, it's so time-consuming to go out there. It is. And it's like...
So you're away from this for a while.
And he doesn't... You probably have no idea what you're buying or what to look for.
No, I had them... walk me through, and they're very nice.
Oh, yeah, they're very nice.
See, so here's what I have now. I have this rest of this eighth, and I don't know how to roll a joint. So They have pre-rolls, though. But they didn't when I went.
Oh, you need to get the pre-roll.
I know, and they sell the pre-rolls, and they also have, like, chocolates, which apparently are pretty effective. I mean, all I know is the bag of gummies. Why I didn't get high off that, I have no idea. The vape thing, I totally understand. Yeah. It wasn't oil. I might have grinded it wrong. I don't know. But it's going to happen. It's such a pain in the ass to get out there. They need to open one like in...
There's one in Brookline.
Yeah, but you got to have a card for it. And it's a great one, apparently. Yeah, it's amazing, but you got to have a card. And I don't have a card. I don't want to get a card.
You know what, Rich? Now I want to be with you when you do it.
Everyone does. Yeah, it's like, dude, my mom can get you high.
All of us would like to see this.
As well, great.
Maybe we'll all do it together.
Let's do it, bro.
We'll do an outing. Everybody bring their best stuff. We'll get Joe Murray with Bongzilla out there. And we'll.
Murray's the guy.
If all the people in the States, I think they can get me blasted out of my mind, it would be Joe Murray. All right, real quick. We'll just finish this discussion later on. But we do need to check in. Fort Myers, we've got Tom Keegan from the Boston Herald is going to give us the latest on everything that's going on down there. We'll also talk to him about this ridiculous Machado contract, which, once again, someone's going to regret. History shows they're going to regret. We'll get to that right after this.
Watch Toucher and Rich on Twitch. Follow the Sports Hub on Twitch.tv for live shows and reruns. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
.5 of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. In just a moment, we're going to have Tom Keegan, who is a sports columnist for the Boston Herald, on with us. But first, at the very beginning of the show, John Wallach played this clip with Nathan Eovaldi. Let me hear this.
It's going good. You know, I'm feeling really well this spring training and moving forward. It's just doing what they say and, you know, trusting in the process. And I feel like that's our whole theme this season and spring training is just trusting the process and do what they say and just be honest with how you feel. And right now I'm feeling great and just moving forward. It's all going good.
How does no one not reference the extremely vicious ping pong game that's going
probably
on?
Probably Pedroia, by the way. It's probably Pedroia is a self-appointed champ of that room.
Played that clip this morning, and the minute I heard that, I thought
the same thing.
Stopped listening to the words that were coming out of his mouth, and I'm just like, who's winning?
Yeah,
exactly. Who's winning that round?
Well, they have two tables in that locker room, I think.
Oh, they have two?
I think they have two.
Well, hopefully nobody throws out their arm. Well, Tom Keegan, he works for the Boston Herald. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealer Expert Hotline. Tom, good morning. Thanks for coming on with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Maybe finally I'll get some Boston Twitter followers, @TomKeeganBoston.
How about
there go,
that?
Man.
There you go.
Look them up.
If anything, we make kings of Twitter. So you hear it on our show, and all of a sudden you'll get at least four or five followers. All right, so the big press conference that happened the other day between John Henry and Tom Werner, he mentioned, of course, that he said that finally admitting that the whole John Lester thing was a massive F-up. And does that say anything to you as far as the future of Chris Sale on this team? Because that seems to be obviously what he's referencing as far as players that are 30 and how their philosophy may have changed.
Well, I think that if what they know about his shoulder that we don't know, they may know that it really isn't a big deal. And in that case, I think they'd definitely re-sign him. Why wouldn't you? Now, if it's troubling, shoulders are tough deals. They're not like elbows. And if they're worried about that, maybe they don't re-sign him. But I do think that that was a good sign, definitely.
Okay, so, but for how much? Like, what kind of deal do you think they would be throwing Chris Sale's way?
Man, I have no idea. The market's kind of fluctuating a little. You know, I think the players were delighted to see yesterday's signing of Manny Machado. And, you know, Harper will probably have something similar, maybe 10 for 350 or something like that. So it's recovering. But I don't know what it'd be with Sale. I don't think it'd be a ton of years, though. Probably a lot per year, but maybe not a ton of years.
Well, here's the thing. Patrick Corbin got a massive contract. He was the only pitcher to get a really big deal during the offseason. But Chris Sale, when he's right, is an ace. He's one of the best 5 or 10 pitchers in the league, if not better than that. And you remember how well he pitched in the playoffs last year. Pitching is always at a premium. You know that. So I don't know if I agree with that. I think somebody's going to come across with a 4 or 5 year contract for a lot of money, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 4 years, maybe. Yeah. But to me, that's not, you know, they don't give pitchers super long contracts anymore. But, yeah, they'll load it up, though, for 4 or 5 years. But, you know, no pitcher's getting 10 years. That's for sure. But, you know, he finishes in the top five in Cy Young every year. The guy's gotten better since he came to Boston. And he was great with the White Sox.
All right, so the Xander Bogaerts situation is interesting. What are you hearing is the latest? Because I know that there's talks have been engaged, at least the reporting is that's come out. What are you hearing as far as numbers and how things are going?
I'm not hearing anything there. That'd be Master Donato does a great job for us, so I'm not up on that. But there's a kid he's 22 years old last year and did what he did. He's got unbelievable power. They're going to lock him up, no question about it.
Do you think the contract negotiations that the Red Sox are conducting now are with an eye towards Mookie Betts 2 years from now? There are two schools of thinking. One is Betts is just going to free agency. He doesn't care what the Red Sox do the next 2 years. He's going to sell himself out to the highest bidder. Or he's kind of looking at the way the Red Sox do things now, and maybe it'll influence how he feels in 2021.
Well, if you're Betts and Betts' agents, you want the former scenario to be what everyone believes. Because you want everyone to believe that you'd just as soon go elsewhere so that you get the best offer out of the Red Sox. So you don't trust everything that comes out. And he doesn't say much, Mookie. You know, he keeps his cards close. But obviously, and you know, there wasn't a better player in baseball last year.
Hey, Tom, you mentioned Manny Machado getting signed with the Padres, record-breaking deal. And you said some of the players reacting to it. Just what are some of the guys saying about that contract? I mean, because let's face it, I mean, up until yesterday, everybody felt like there's a huge market correction in Major League Baseball, and all of a sudden you see that blockbuster deal. What are some of the players, or what are some of the thoughts from the players about that Manny Machado deal signed yesterday?
Well, I don't think they were panicking, but you know that those two guys were out there, but they were definitely frustrated, and I think there was a sense of relief. And I thought Alex Cora had the best quote. He said, good for him and good for baseball. It's good for baseball. And, you know, I think it is. You don't want your best players sitting out there watching when the season starts. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. I think, you know, what I think people are missing on the market, I don't think it's the owners colluding. I think it is a good number of GMs acting in self-preservation. And the way you do that, if you're at one of the smaller or medium markets, you convince your owner, look, this is going to take 5 years. It's a rebuilding program, and we need to stockpile prospects and not spend money on free agency. And that way, you know, the owner's like, okay, I can live with not spending money. Everybody loves the word prospects, fans, owners, everyone, because prospects haven't failed yet. So everyone thinks they're going to be great. And that's a way for a GM to preserve his job. There's no pressure on you for another 5 years. Whereas if you go out and make a big free agent signing, the way a lot of these owners think, your clock is ticking. And if that doesn't pay off right away, you're screwed. But if you just sell them on prospects, I could see a bunch of GMs getting together, sidling up at the bar at the winter meetings and just cooking this up a few years ago. They said, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, really, this is self-production. Because that's life-changing money if you're a major league general manager, even at these small places. And you know what? They're just acting in self-interest like the rest of us do.
And apparently A.J. Preller didn't get the memo because he just signed Eric Hosmer to a mammoth $150 million contract and followed that up with $300 million to Manny Machado. And that still doesn't get them into the playoffs, I don't think. Do you?
Well, and the clock is ticking on them. So, you know. There's a guy who wants to compete and wants to win, and we'll see if they have the pitching to do it.
All right, Tom Keegan, thanks for giving us a call. Hey, do me a favor. If you see Dan Roach down there, tell him that we love him, we miss him, and that sooner or later there's a trip to Disney in his future, hopefully, so he can have a nice smile on his face.
Well, you know, maybe he was, cooling off swimming last night the way I was. I've been driving around my sunroof, sitting outdoors, writing.
Don't be a jackass. Really difficult.
Tom, don't be a jackass. We started to like you, and then you started rubbing
it in. 20 degrees here. Come on.
I was born a jackass, and I don't see any reason to
change. All right, Tom. We'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, man.
All right. We have some conversations we need to finish because I'm looking at the phone, and there's now people want to give me advice. Stoners want to give me
advice. So
why not?
Yeah.
Let's go for it. 617-779-0985 right after John Wallach's headlines.
For the latest podcasts, the latest sports news, and for Tutcher and Rich, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
.985 of Sports Hub. It's Tutcher and Rich with Ted Johnson in studio this morning for Fred. And let's just go and get it over with. Andrew, on line two. What do you got there, Andrew?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Before I start, Ted Johnson, you're great. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
And you're great on the radio. All right, real quick. First, Rich, I use marijuana for medical and recreational. Mm-hmm. So coming from someone who hates gummies, who has tried edibles, and I don't get high from them at all, I would say go to, I don't want to say big something Murray, but I would go to him, get a little good, regular marijuana, pack a pipe, and sit there and smoke a couple times. It might not work the first time, but if you try, you know, not consecutively, but out of a week, two times, three times, after the third time, you'll be feeling it.
All right, thank you.
That, forget about all that other stuff. I just want to be real quick about Kyrie. Kyrie is holding this team hostage. I would love Kyrie and AD as a team, but at some point you got to say, get this flat earth guy out of here.
Yeah.
Let's concentrate around Tatum. And, you know, Tatum, I don't really like Jaylen Brown, but Tatum, Smart, Rozier, Horford's, his salary comes off the books in a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, I just wanted to get that all in. I love you guys. Rich, I love you. You're making it too hard. You just got to get some just regular shit. Just some
Is that any surprise, though?
I didn't know. I didn't see that coming at all.
Damn it. I wanted him to just keep
like
going.
Winding up. He's just winding up. He was getting so excited, right?
Andrew, you call back anytime. I wanted to count how many 180s he took. Just like, I was going to let him go. And I was just, I was.
And then the Kyrie, after the edibles and how you should consume it and what you need to do for your first time.
I'd written down four left turns. I'm like, he's going to go to four different topics.
Yeah.
And he's not going to stop. And he's not going to take a breath.
That's him calling back.
We might have to take him in a little bit. Yeah. I mean, okay. So, by the way, you know, when I was saying that I couldn't get higher, I didn't get high the first couple times.
Off
I tried
the edibles,
it.
Yes.
Do you know how many DMs I've gotten that are like, dude, I can leave something really good for you at those things?
If you what?
I won't get anywhere into trouble at all.
So excited to get you on board.
Isn't that true?
It's like they're thrilled to educate you. They're thrilled to just, you know, convince you or to lay out all the information so that you feel comfortable and that you're okay with it. They're very helpful people when it comes to this.
It's like they're jealous that you get to do it for the first time. And it's like it's almost like when I find out someone's going to start watching Breaking Bad. I just go, "Oh, dude. You don't even know what's ahead of you, man. It's going to rule."
Yeah.
And that's how everyone is whenever I'm like, dude, I can't get stoned. Like, dude, I got you, man. Let's get together. Let's make a night out of it.
It's so true, bro. It's
but,
so true.
But the one thing I found interesting is that, we've been talking about this. And this is something I've talked about for a while. And as far as marijuana is concerned. And Ted, this is something that you, probably, not of anybody. I mean, you lived during one of the toughest times in the NFL as far as hard hits.
Pre 2011.
Absolutely. Before you couldn't touch the quarterback. Yeah. And there was a lot more regulation when it came to
a lot more hitting in practice.
A lot more hitting in practice. You went helmet to helmet with a guy one time that hit him so hard that it cracked his helmet in half.
Yeah, I got a cool picture of that, actually. I
do want to see that, by the way.
I'll show you the picture.
I do want to see it.
It's believe it or not, I made it into a really big picture. And when I do talks on concussions, I'll show that picture. So yes, Jamie Nails, and it was his name was Jamie Nails.
And you nailed Jamie Nails.
And yeah, it was 2003. It was a game against the Miami Dolphins, and I was playing a team. I was playing a team that had a nickname for me. Mm-hmm. I found out later. The Miami Dolphins nicknamed me Cement Head Ted.
Okay.
And then the Buffalo Bills, both division teams, nicknamed me Ted the Head. So I didn't realize this. I talked to these former Bills and Miami players later, and they said they had these nicknames for me. But regardless, the game was 2003 December, and it was a direct run. Jamie Nails, the left guard for the Miami Dolphins, big, strong. I mean, dude, this guy's like 330 probably. Jeez. At least. We hit each other like on a direct run. So I'm lining up middle linebacker, 3 to 4 to 5 yards off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So when a direct run, meaning he's responsible for coming out and getting me on the run, and the running back basically follows the guard.
Are you face to face?
We're face to face.
Oh my God.
We're face to face. And so what happens is right, I read direct run, here he comes. So my job is to initiate contact. What I do on every single play when I take on a guard, or any blocker for that matter, is I drop my hips, lower my head, and I put the crown of my helmet right under their chin. And so it snaps their head back. So it's like they call it a stun and separate technique. So I go in there, I drop my hips, drop my helmet, put it right under their chin, and hit them and stun them. So their head goes, snaps back, and then that's when I put my hands in there to separate. So stun and separate, and then I disengage to make the play. I did that on that play, and I'll never forget. After that play, I mean, I think it was Richard Seymour made the play right there, but I didn't make the play. I just remember hitting Jamie Nails and then kind of feeling a little loopy. And then all I hear is Roman Pfeiffer scream, "We're breaking helmets out here!" And I look, and there's Jamie Nails without a helmet on. And there it is in two pieces. His helmet was in two pieces.
Oh.
Guys, we must have watched that play 100 times in the linebacker room. Wow. I mean, you just see the helmet just split in two and then fall to the ground.
Oh, my God.
And we had never seen anything like it.
How was he?
Jamie, came back in the game.
Dude,
got a helmet.
How were you?
I was concussed. But it wasn't one of those deals where it was, in the concussion feeling, is, for me, when I would get concussed, I got a all the time is this feeling of where everything slows down, right? And and everybody's walking around in slow motion. Or after the hit, that's what everything was kind of, everybody's moving around in slow motion. There's this warmth kind of feeling that engulfs your entire body, and your vision's a little blurry, right? And then so what happens is after a few seconds, it starts to go speed up again, and then your vision comes back, and then everything's kind of back to normal after you know, and what happens is, and when you first start getting your concussions early on, that what I just described lasts for a few seconds. The more and more I got over the career, over my career, that's they would take like 20 seconds, 30 seconds, sometimes 35 seconds of the play clock, and I'm looking at the sideline trying to get signals, and my vision's still blurry from the hit before. So it adds up over time. When you get more and more, that feeling I just described of getting concussed would last longer and longer. But Jamie Nail split his helmet, and it's one of my proudest moments, man.
Jeez, man. Well, so you've been very open about your concussion history. How many times do you think you've had a concussion on the football field?
Hundreds.
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 Like over 200.
Easy. Yeah, and I asked Gary Plummer this one time. He played middle linebacker for 15 years. Gary, how many concussions you got? 754, Ted. I'm like, what? Jesus. I mean, he goes, well, I did the math. You know, when he played, and it wasn't, you know, he was the kind of the generation before me. I mean, it was padded practices twice a week, you know, and it was two-a-days for 6 weeks. Jeez. And it was legit two-a-days, like pads in the morning, shell, like half pads in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So a lot more hitting. And he just said, I did the numbers, and that feeling that, you know, we described that feeling to each other that I just described to you. He goes, I've had that easily hundreds of times.
Has there ever been a time where after a hit you wanted, like, you had to, you wanted out, like, I can't play, something's off, and you tried to get out of the game, but you were encouraged to go back in?
Do you remember as a few years ago, Luke Kuechly in a Monday night Sunday night game,
he looked like he was, like, he didn't know where he was,
right? He got carted off
for
a concussion,
and he was looking at his feet, but, and like, he didn't know where he was.
Do you remember, like, he was crying?
Yep.
Like, uncontrollable crying. That's happened to me before. And I was like, wow. I got a concussion just a few days after I got my a concussion. So I got him within, like, a 4-day period. And that second one, and that it wasn't healed yet, and I got another one, it was like, all of a sudden, uncontrollable crying. And I was trying to call the play, and I could barely do it.
It wasn't from pain, though, was it? It was
no.
Because you couldn't control
I could not control that function. I could not stop crying. And it was that one scared me. That one scared me.
Did anyone from the team, like, say, hey, Ted, take a play off?
No, no. Because
You laugh because it's a different time than it is now.
We didn't know that was a concussion back then, Rich. I mean, you just thought that, well, you got your bell rung. Those are very common phrases used, is bell rung and getting dinged. You just got dinged. You know, we didn't know then, like we know now, like what potentially that could lead to later in life.
Even near the end of your time, because you stopped in 2006, is that right?
My last year was the 2004 season. I retired the first day of training camp 2005.
2005, okay. So even up at that point, because I think the big study came out right after you retired.
CTE wasn't discovered until 2006.
Okay.
So I retired before we knew any of this
stuff. That's right, okay.
Before, and when it was kind of controversial because, you know, I talked about my head being hurt. I just knew my head hurt.
Yeah.
And I knew that if I, the first day of training camp in 2005, that first hit in training camp, I was going to get concussed. How did I know that? Because the first day of training camp in 2003, I got concussed. The first hit in training camp of 2004, I got concussed. I knew that feeling was going to come back the first day. I was going to have it again. And I thought, I just know I'm doing something wrong to my head. I know my personality is changing. I know it just doesn't feel right. And so I retired the first day of training camp 2005.
So you for, all these years, as you said, over hundreds of concussions.
Yes.
And I know you've been very open about how tough it is afterwards. Now that you are 15 years removed from playing in the NFL.
13.
It's taken that long to kind of figure out how to maintain it,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, there's no blueprint for dealing with it. I've just learned what works for me.
What helps?
What helps for me is I got to live the most diligent life I can live. Be on a good schedule. My workouts are one of the most important things for me. It's more working out is a more important than a career for me at this point.
Okay.
Like, that's what gets me on track for the rest of my life.
Something to focus on. Is it more about the focus than it is about the actual health of your body?
You have to eat well. You have to sleep right. Any side effects you might have, treat them. So if you have anxiety, if you have sleep issues, if you have impulse control issues, if you have any depression, then treat those. There's a pharmaceutical, you know, there's, you know, you can go, get them on med protocol, go to a psychiatrist, treat those.
Yeah.
But you have to really take care of yourself, and you can't live a sedentary life. If I just check out in life and I just retire and don't do anything, worst thing for your brain. It is. And so it's funny.
It's because of the lack of activity and the lack of stimulus.
Yes.
And then you kind of live inside your own head at that point.
Yes.
And what is that like to live inside your own head?
Well, it's not fun because no one understands it. It's the there's a lot of shame around this injury because it's the invisible injury. You don't see it. What's wrong with you, Ted? You look fine.
Yeah.
You know, like if it was a physical issue, you see it. Bad back, knees, guys walking around. But it's in the brain, but you look fine. And so it can be a lonely kind of place to be if people don't understand it.
Are you worried about, you mentioned CTE. What, are you worried about that? How worried are you about the long-term effects here?
Big time. Big time. I mean, because the evidence is overwhelming. You know, they've done BU brain, you know, Boston University has done a ton. AMICI.
Yeah, right here.
Right.
They're doing
right
a ton of good
they've
research.
They've done
right.
I went over 100 autopsies, maybe close to 200 now. I don't know the number. It's like a 98%, you know, CTE conclusion in all these brains. I mean, it's almost, and there's different levels of it. I think we're learning, and so like until they find the imaging technology that you can test in the living for CTE,
right?
I just have to assume I have it. I played a very physical position at a time when. In a style in which it was where I led with my head on every single play. And so there's got to be something there. It's just, you know, you just hope that it's, it's a progressive thing. And then you hope that later it just waits for a long time before it really starts affecting your personality in ways that, you know, is very noticeable.
Do you smoke?
Do I smoke? Yes.
Okay. Does that help? Because, I mean, that's the one thing I hear that, like, the marijuana, it's one of the biggest things that is a selling point for trying to make it throughout the NFL legal is that instead of getting hooked on pain pills, marijuana is a much better supplement. Does that help?
It is. It helps with, it really, there's, you know, you can say, well, and I have to be careful because I've had addiction issues, bad addiction issues that have derailed my life.
And you've been very open about it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And so I feel like I'm lucky to be here. So, Ted, you're not supposed to be doing that.
Well, not marijuana because it's not addictive.
Well, it's if I went and told my counselors that and my therapist that I've worked with over my life and said, hey, but I'm going to smoke pot. Is that cool? They look at you like you're crazy.
So they are not advocates of it. Yet the medical side of the world says it is good for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's they would say it's a gateway to the harder stuff that I had the issues with, the harder stuff. But I'm also a very unique case study, right? Like my profile is there's not a lot of people that have studied my profile, which is what is my profile? Someone who played in the NFL for 10 years. Who has addiction issues, but that also can benefit from a drug?
Yes,
for all these hits and these concussions. Yeah. So you have to kind of look at it through a different lens for me than you would the typical profile of an addict.
Without a doubt. Right. And so I mean that is kind of wild that you have two different people telling you two different things. See, I would almost think that marijuana would be the thing that would keep you away from the others, from the opioids, and from all of those.
Oh, it does. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a huge believer in it for that reason. So guys that are dealing with pain, it's a healing. Can you get high with it? Yeah, but most guys use it in a form, in a strain that's conducive for healing. Not for getting high, but for healing. And for, honestly, being a functioning adult. Yeah. Like, it helps them be a functioning adult. And a lot of these guys, without it, can't be that, which is sad.
Wow. So you can kind of point at marijuana and say, this is something that helps me feel somewhat normal again and be able to function in society as a normal human being.
Yeah. You know, because a lot of if you have a predisposition for anxiety or depression,
which comes with concussions,
right? It exacerbates the concussions, just exacerbate that precondition that you have. And so it's a huge, huge, huge help. Got people with mood disorders, with depression, with anxiety. It bumps up your mood. Things that the guys that have concussions have a short fuse. They go from 0 to 60 really fast. Marijuana can help slow that down and give you you have this ability to not react and then wait and not be so reactionary. So it's hugely beneficial for a lot of guys.
Well, I got to be honest. You know, people like you who are honest about all of this is the only thing that's going to, I think, help. And it's going to make the awareness out there, as you said, for people who are situations like you are. It's going to take testimony of people saying this truly helps me, and it keeps me away from the bad stuff that caused the addiction.
Talk about it because there's still a bad connotation.
There's a weird stigma, which I don't understand. Yeah. I don't get it. But man, strong stuff, dude. Thanks. Glad you're all right, man.
I'm doing good.
Good to hear. And I want to see that video you split in that guy's helmet.
That's the first thing I want to see.
I'll get you a break.
Pull it up in the break. All right,
I'll tweet it out.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
If you live in Massachusetts, community is your thing. Since 1972, the Massachusetts State Lottery has provided over $25 billion to help cities.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.